I am so pleased to welcome Stephen Dunn to Poets on Air. He is the author of 11 collections of poetry, including Loosed Strife, New and Selected Poems 1974 to 1994, Landscapes at the End of the Century, and Between Angels. In 2001, he won the Pulitzer Prize for poetry for his book, Different Hours. I'm especially pleased to have Stephen on this program, not only because he was my teacher and my friend, and because he's such an extraordinary poet, but also because all the help he gave me in contacting people for this program and for making it what it is. Two poems that I was hoping you would read for us today and talk to us about. The first is called To a Terrorist. It first appeared in the book Between Angels, and it was in response to the Lockerbie terrorist attack in 1988. And what's so ironic about it is that now in 2001 and 2002, it is still so resonant. Would you read us To a Terrorist, please?
To a Terrorist. For the historical ache, the ache passed down which finds its circumstance and becomes the present ache, I offer this poem without hope, knowing there's nothing, not even revenge, which alleviates a life like yours. I offer it as one might offer his father's ashes to the wind, a gesture when there's nothing else to do. Still, I must say to you, I hate your good reasons. I hate the hatefulness that makes you fall in love with death, your own included. Perhaps you're hating me now, I who own my own house, and live in a country so muscular, so smug, it thinks its terror is meant only to mean well and to protect. Christ turned his singular cheek, one man's holiness, another's absurdity. Like you, the rest of us obey the sting, the surge. I'm just speaking out loud to cancel my silence. Consider it an old impulse, doomed to become mere words. The first poet probably spoke to thunder, and for a while believed thunder had an ear and a choice.
The first poet probably spoke to thunder, and for a while believed thunder had an ear and a choice. That's fairly radical. It seems to me that in this poem you are working through empathy with the terrorist. If you do not believe that thunder has an ear and a choice, perhaps the terrorist doesn't have a choice.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think my major impulse for writing the poem perhaps began with a kind of empathy, but it also got mixed up with anger and with a whole variety of emotion. It really was an attempt to speak when just because one needs to speak, and especially to maybe someone who cannot be spoken to.
The poem also, for me, is about how we lie to ourselves, how we live through our delusions. I think its terror is meant only to mean well. I mean, you're talking about our country, mm-hmm. the terror that we perpetrate in other countries. Mm-hmm. There's another moment of empathy there.
Yes.
When you read this poem for us today and know that it applies so much to what happened on September 11th, what does that say to us about growth and development through time with these terrible acts?
Well, I suspect if I had attempted to write it right after 9/11, I wouldn't have been able to. I think there are circumstances, and then there are overwhelming circumstances, and the overwhelming circumstances tend not to produce very good poetry for a while. I think the responses need some time before good poetry might emerge.
These poems.
So I was happy that people reminded me that I had this poem.
Yes. Well, these crimes are truly unspeakable. I think there's this problem that it is so horrendous that there's the possibility, the likelihood, the fact of becoming numb just to be able to survive. Psychologists were saying that the for those of us who are not directly involved, as if there is such a thing, that the effects would show up 3, 6, 8 months, 9 months later, so that there would be a protective numbness in between.
Mm-hmm. Well, I felt that kind of numbness right from the start. I think. I remember I was doing a reading on September 16th at Billy Collins's place up in Westchester, New York, and we were deciding whether we should do the reading, whether it was right, and we both mm-hmm. decided I should come and do it, and we had an enormous crowd,
mm-hmm.
and I read To a Terrorist, and then I read only love poems.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Feeling, I think, that the way that poetry most serves in that kind of circumstance is to remind us of the lives we actually live.
You also wrote the poem Grudges, which appears in Johnson and Marion's wonderful anthology, Poetry After 9/11. And in here, too, you don't go an easy route. You face on the terrorists fairly directly. Would you read us Grudges, please?
Grudges. Easy for almost anything to occur. Even if we've scraped the sky, we can be rubble. For years, those men felt one way, acted another. Ground zero, is it possible to get lower? Now we had a new definition of the personal. Knew almost anything could occur. It just takes a little training to blur a motive, lie low while planning the terrible, get good at acting one way, feeling another. Yet who among us doesn't harbor a grudge or secret? So much isn't erasable. It follows that almost anything can occur. Like men ascending into the democracy of air without intending to land, the useful veil of having said one thing, meaning another. Before you know it, something's over. Suddenly someone's missing at the table. It's easy, I know it, for anything to occur. When men feel one way, act another.
You chose a traditional form for this poem, the villanelle,
mm-hmm.
to contain, I guess.
So I think I needed something to distract me. That I was working on something else, that is the formal aspects of the poem, as I was working on the content. And I, for me, it was a useful distraction.
I think it also works on the musical level. For those of you who don't know what a villanelle is, it's a traditional form with three-line stanzas with repeating lines. And in this instance, well, for me, the villanelle is almost always a poem of loss or a parody on villanelles. It seems to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
But in here, it almost has the effect of a dirge on the one hand, the repetition, easy for almost anything to occur, you know, new almost anything could occur. It's like it's almost like you're trying to get yourself to hear it, to understand it, just this whole concept of why, how could this happen?
The dirge is a nice example. I wouldn't have thought of that, but I think it does approximate that.
It does, and it reminds me of Elizabeth Bishop's One Art. You know, the art of losing is not hard to master. I mean, you start the poem with easy, and even in that last stanza, you have that parenthetical statement.
I think the parenthetical is directly indebted to her.
Yes, very much so. The whole theme in here about dissemblance, to feel one way and act another, that for me in one of my readings, it really implicates us all.
Yeah, well, I needed. I think the poem is as much about the times in my life when I've been deceptive or deceitful as it is about them as well.
Yes. I know that one of the things that was so moving about what happened after the disaster is that some neighbors actually try to mend and atone. If we can't atone with our next-door neighbors, what hope do we have with people who have such vastly different approaches to things, to put it mildly? Stephen, is there anything else that you can tell us in response to the question of is poetry possible after 9/11?
Poetry is absolutely not only possible but necessary after 9/11, as it is, and not just because of 9/11, just because poetry is a way of finding essential speech for what matters to us, finding hopefully beyond essential speech, memorable speech, so that there will certainly be poetry after 9/11, and the urge to break silence, I think,
yes.
Or as you call it, numbness,
yes.
was very powerfully felt by a lot of people. Though I'm quite sure that the best poems, if we can call them poems, that were written after, that were done after 9/11, were the photographs.
Yes.
Especially those in the New Yorker. No poem could have possibly equaled that.
They go below, because words are very protean, and they can take the place of feeling sometimes, and images go below that surface of words. I want to thank you so much, Stephen Dunn, for generously joining us today and for reading these powerful poems and for your reflections.
Thank you, Susanna.
That was an interview with Stephen Dunn, who is the 2001 Pulitzer Prize winner for poetry for his book, Different Hours. He is, as well, a distinguished professor of creative writing at Richard Stockton College of New Jersey. The first poem that Stephen Dunn read to us is called To a Terrorist, and it was in response to the 1988 terrorist bombing of Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland. The flight was filled with holiday travelers, mostly from London to New York, and all 259 passengers and crew perished, along with 11 people on the ground. Sculptor Suze Lowenstein created an incredible series of sculptures in response because her son died on that flight. This is what she writes about her work called Dark Elegy. I am a sculptor, and it is natural for me to shape, form, and translate my emotions into large human figures. At this point, I started creating mother figures in various expressions of grief, pain, and rage. When other women who had lost loved ones on Pan Am 103 learned of my work, many expressed a desire to contribute to the project called Dark Elegy. One by one, they came into my studio and stepped onto an opposing platform and closed their eyes and went back to December 21, 1988, to that horrible moment when they learned that their loved one had died. They allowed their bodies to fall into the position that it took upon hearing that most devastating news. Some scream, some beg, some weep, some pray, some curl into a ball, while others raise their fists in anger and despair. This is the moment that I freeze in time. This is the pose that I shape into the sculpture. And she has well over 20 sculptures and making more. I also wrote a poem in response to the Lockerbie disaster, and this was in response to and in honor of Suze Lowenstein's Dark Elegy. I drew much of my imagery and inspiration from her work. The poem is called In the Garden of Grief. In the garden of grief, among the scatters of fingernail, button, watch, our hands swell into branches, our breasts spread into canopies, our toes, like rows of fat teeth, root the earth. In asanas of welded pain, we rub our bodies with shards of steel, ground glass, and ash, as if we could numb into stone crows and lions, as if we could pour like lava over what is left, as if we could mold a shoelace into a vein, an earring into an ovary, a torn sock into a heart. Turn, we turn, as if we could unspin eons, decompose into water and salt, start over, and know again how it is to have eyes, how to lift our heads, how wings make this falling of the sky, this our splitting open like seed from strains of gravity and fire, from the having to look so grief won't grow. We are now listening to movement 2 from the prayer cycle, and it is entitled Strength. In the field of white crosses, I am gone. In the low tones of thunder, where the clouds run, I ride with the gentle rain. Sleepless in the immaculate night, I am lost remembering your eyes, perhaps dreaming in acts of light, close as you reach for the moon between your fingers that cover your eyes against the sun.